All right, everybody. Candidates, I think we're missing two. All right, well, good evening again. My name is Betsy Santiago. I am a business strategist with FSCJ, and I'm honored to be here tonight with my colleagues presenting this forum to you. This is our second one, and we also are doing a voter registration drive. So I think everybody has seen the primaries and has seen what has happened as a result of those primaries. A couple of surprises for sure. And so tonight's forum is really an opportunity for us to get to know those that won those primaries a little bit better and make some really informed decisions. So tonight's program is sponsored or is presented to you by the Jimenez Law Firm with the co-sponsors, the First Coast Hispanic Chamber of Commerce and the Northeast Florida Hispanic Leadership Alliance. So we would like to begin our program by having an invocation tonight by Pastor Jose Paredes, who is also the chairman of the First Coast Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, and he'll present our invocation tonight.
Thank you, Betsy. Good evening, everybody. If I can invite you all to stand. And I would like to encourage the folks in the back and by the bar, if you can just hold off your conversations for a minute so we can have this invocation, if we can bow our heads. Thank you, Lord, for the blessings you have bestowed upon our lives. You have provided us with more than we could ever imagine. You have surrounded us with people who always look out for us. You have given us family and friends who bless us every day with kind words and actions. They lift us up in ways to keep our eyes focused on you and make our spirits soar. You help us make better choices, and you have provided us with advisors to help us with those difficult decisions. You speak to us. We can always know you are here. I pray you give us the ability to give them the same kindness they have given to us. And I'm just so grateful for all the blessings you have bestowed on all of us. I pray that you remind us of just how blessed we are that we live in a country like this, and that you never allow us to ever forget to be grateful in all we do. In God's name we pray, amen.
Thank you so much, Pastor. And now we are honored today to have our JSO color guard again. If you will please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance led to us tonight by Andrea Reyes from the Reyes Law Firm. She is an immigration attorney that actually was just naturalized herself, so this is a very special moment for us to have her on stage with us as well.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you so much, JSO, and thank you so much, Andrea. You may be seated. So I would like now to take an opportunity to introduce Tomas Jimenez Jr. He's our host. The Jimenez Law Firm, or he owns the Jimenez Law Firm. He's a sole proprietor right here in San Marco. He focuses on commercial and residential real estate law, property insurance claims, and business formation. Tomas Jimenez Jr. is a native of Jacksonville. He serves on the Mayor's Hispanic American Advisory Board, the Jacksonville Urban League, and is a member of the Rotary Club of South Jacksonville. Tomas.
Thank you, Betsy, and thank you everyone for being here. Round of applause again for the JSO Honor Guard. So I'll keep it short. Last time I think I spent more time saying thank you than I did giving my speech. But I want to thank everyone for being here, of course. This is our second event of many that are to come. We're working on doing something for the upcoming elections in 2019 and 2020 as well. So we hope that you'll all take time to be here for that. I'm happy to be organizing this forum in a place where I call home have called home for my entire life, and be able to bring folks together from both sides of the aisle to talk about issues that are important to our community, and be able to have a place where we can have a dialogue, a meaningful dialogue, to talk about important things that matter and try to find some balance between the opposing interests and try to find some solutions to some of the problems that we face here in our community and in the country. We have a very exciting program today. We have folks who've come in from across the state, Miami, Tampa, Orlando, Tallahassee, who are here with us this evening. So we welcome them and hope that they'll be here with us next time as well. So our program tonight, we have some really tough questions for the candidates. We're going to talk about gun control, we're going to talk about veterans, taxations, healthcare, education as well. So I'm sure you'll find it to be quite exciting. And after the presentation, we ask everyone, we're inviting you to stay to have some hors d'oeuvres here with us at the end and meet the candidates, talk to them, ask them follow-up questions, talk to them about whatever your concerns are in the community and what you think you can maybe even help them do, or if you find it in your heart to do so. And then I want to thank, of course, the parties for being here, the participants, the public officials, and all those who've come. And we have a few people to thank. Of course, I want to make sure, obviously, we want to thank all these folks for their support and helping get the word out and contributing to this event, because without our friends, we would not be able to put something together like this. But special thanks to Dr. Renee Polito and the Politos for giving us this beautiful venue. Thanks, Doc. And then we want to also thank Melwin with Indecorate. He helped us do the balloons and setting up this, and he's does some event planning and so forth. So I wanted to give him a quick plug and thank him for that. He did a very wonderful job. A lot nicer than what we had last time, so thank him for that. And I won't take any more time. I thank you again for being here. And of course, Supervisor of Election, thank you for being here as well. We can't forget them either, of course. Thank you. All right, well, I won't keep any more time. Hand it over to Betsy. God bless you all, and God bless the United States of America.
Well, I'd like to take a minute to also invite Greg Clark up to the stage. He's with the Supervisor of Elections Office, and tonight we're actually doing this purposely on this date in order to incorporate our voter registration drive. So, turn it over to you.
Thank you, Betsy. I appreciate it very much. As Betsy said, thank you. My name is Greg Clark. I'm the Director of Community Outreach and Special Events with the Duval County Supervisor of Elections. I can't say I could ever step into Mike Hogan's shoes, but I've been actually asked to fill him for a few minutes tonight. Mike unexpectedly was unable to attend, so he sends his apologies. We're here, what, for the November 6th general election, right? But that's actually much closer than we think, because October 22nd is the start of early voting. Early voting will run from October 22nd until November 4th. We actually are excited to say that we now have 20 early voting sites. We've added the University of North Florida and Edward Waters College. We're actually up to 603,775 registered voters as of this morning. So we broke the 600,000 barrier, which was a nice milestone earlier last week. So that tells us we've got excitement about the election because there's been a lot of push and run up to the election. And of course, we're seeing big voter registration numbers come in. We're actually expecting between 56 and 62% turnout, which actually, again, tells us that there's a lot of excitement out in the community about it. It's nice they've got our website here. We reworked it this year. It's a treasure trove of information. You can actually look up your sample ballot there, but you'll be happy to know that sample ballots are actually starting to drop right now to come out to your homes. Also, I want to mention briefly about vote by mail. We've already made a large vote by mail drop. Vote by mail goes out daily as the requests come in, but you can actually make requests for vote by mail through October 31st, and that can be done by calling our office by phone, 630-1414. Visit the website. You can actually request it through the site, or you could visit myself and my colleague Scott at the back table tonight, and we can help you make that vote by mail request. So today's actually October 9th. It's the last day to register to vote in Duval County. So that's what we're here for. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. I'd also like to point out that in the back table, in the left back there, the League of Women Voters has brought some voter registration guides. It's nonpartisan. It talks about both sides, where the officials, the elected candidates, actually stand on different issues. So if you want to pick one up, they're both in Spanish and English, and they're in the back table. So now, I would like to recognize some special people in our audience today, some of the committee that helped us put this together, Tomas Jimenez Sr. with the Northeast Florida Hispanic Leadership Alliance. You've met some of the other board members as well, or committee members, I should say. Jose Paredes, who did our invocation. Leon Carrero, who also helped with a lot of putting this together. Asta, who's in the booth back there, has also helped us quite a bit. And so we've just got some, this really took a team effort. Thank you to the chamber for their efforts as well. Now I'd like to please have any elected official that is here with us today, if you will please rise, if you will please stand. Is there anybody here? Okay, thank you. Thank you for being with us. We're going to hear a little bit more about from these candidates in a while, in a little bit. I'd also like to invite any candidate that is running for office right now, exclusion of our panel, of course. I see Mia Jones is in the audience. I believe Matt Carlucci was here earlier today as well. Thank you very much. Oh, there. Who are you? I'm sorry, I can't see. But thank you all for being here so much. Jim Overton, I'm sorry, the lights are in my eyes, I can't see. But thank you so much, all of you, for being here. If you'll take a look and please approach them afterwards as well, they'll be hopefully part of our next panel. All right. Oh. And we also have with us from Senator Bill Nelson's office, Michelle Barr. Thank you for also coming and being a part of our program. Thank you all for your dedication and service to this community. And thank you, Tomas, for putting this forum together. All right, so I think we're ready to begin. So I'd like to lay some ground rules and kind of explain how our forum is going to take place tonight. So tonight's program is really a nonpartisan political event, like we've said. That means that we're not endorsing any candidates or political parties. This program is a forum. It is not meant to be a debate. So let's try to keep that under wraps. While we won't be able to really address everybody's questions, there will be time at the end where you can come directly to the candidates and ask your questions afterwards. So we're going to try to keep this rolling very quickly. We're going to ask each candidate, I will introduce them. We'll ask each one of you two questions. You'll have 30 seconds to answer, and then you'll have a minute to do your closing remarks at the end once everybody has gone. We'll bring you up in different groups. We've got a timer right here that'll help keep us in time, so just watch out for him. As far as the, and one other thing that I would like to point out is that there are currently some of our congressmen and our other representatives are in office right now. They're in Washington, and they weren't able to join us, so Senator Bill Nelson and Congressman John Rutherford were two of the ones that did send their regards and wish that they could be with us, but they couldn't be here today. So, audience, in order to maximize our time for the candidates to answer questions, we would like to ask you to please avoid any expressions of support or opposition to any of these candidates during the presentation time or any of the question answer time at the end. Tonight's agenda, along with the information on the candidates, can be found on votejacksonville.com or votajacksonville.com, as you see behind me. We invite you to please go visit these websites, learn a little bit more about the candidates. Their bios are there, their endorsements are there, links to their websites are there, and we've got actually the full agenda is on that website as well. For now, we would like to ask you to please silence your phones. However, please use your social media page, go live on Facebook, upload your photos from tonight, and remember that Jacksonville Candidate Forum on Facebook is where we're gathering all this information, so if you want to tag us on your Facebook, we would love to have you do that. All right, so I think we're done with house rules. We'd like to begin with our first segment with the candidates running for Florida House of Representatives, District 11 and 12. Please join me on the stage. Okay, so we are going to begin with District 11, and we have, actually, I think we're missing one tonight. I'm not sure if he got stuck in traffic or what happened. So we are going to actually be hearing from Cord Bird. He is running for Florida House, District 11, and he is the incumbent. So to tell you a little bit about Cord Bird, he's a fifth-generation Floridian and native of Jacksonville, Jacksonville Beaches, that is. He lives in Neptune Beach with his wife Esther and his children Dominic, age 15, and Lexi, age 4. He graduated from the University of North Florida and the St. Thomas University School of Law. As a sole practitioner, he's an attorney since 2007. Cord has represented clients on both state and federal courts. He is one of only a few firearms law experts in Florida. He represents clients in administrative and judicial proceedings. And in addition, Cord donates hundreds of hours each year to pro bono legal work and teaches about constitutional rights and safe and responsible firearms ownership. So Cord was elected in 2016 to serve as the 11th District of Florida House of Representatives, which includes Nassau County and the coastline south to Jacksonville Beaches. So thank you, Cord, for being with us tonight. We'll begin with you, your first two questions. What is your position on gun control, particularly background checks for those purchasing guns legally in Florida?
Thank you for the question, and it's an honor to be with everyone this evening. You know, as you mentioned, my expertise in the law is in the area of firearms. It is one of the most heavily regulated industries in our country. I donate hundreds of hours each year to pro bono legal services to try to get good information in the hands of law-abiding citizens. With rights, with constitutional rights, come responsibilities, and I emphasize that. I support background checks, and it's actually one of the reasons why I didn't support the law that the legislature passed this last year, because one of the unintended consequences of rushing to pass that legislation was we force young people into private un-background check sales, which I think we need to come back and readdress that next year, because I think we would all agree that we want more people having background checks so that we know that only the law-abiding citizens are getting firearms.
Thank you so much. So your second question, how have you helped to advocate for small business owners, specifically minority small business owners in Tallahassee?
Sure. Once again, thank you for the question. And as you mentioned, I've owned my own business since 2007. So I've not only signed the back of a paycheck, I signed the front of one. As a small business owner, I see the regulatory burdens that we put on small businesses, the tax burdens, and that's one of the reasons why I ran, and I'm proud to have supported the last 2 years, legislation that will reduce sales tax on leased businesses, because that is a barrier to entry for entrepreneurs and small business people looking to get into living the American dream. In 2007, when the economy crashed, I decided I wanted to go out on my own. So I understand the challenges that are faced by small businesses, and it's the greatest decision I ever made. So I am a champion of entrepreneurs and small business people in Tallahassee.
Thank you so much. All right, so since our other candidate is MIA tonight, we're
going to
move on. just for tonight. So we are going to move on to Florida House of Representatives. We've got Clay Yarborough and Timothy Yost. And so we'll begin with Clay Yarborough. He grew up in District 12. He is a product of local public schools and a graduate of UNF with a bachelor's degree in business administration. During college, he worked as a truck loader at UPS. And for the past 10 years, he has moved up to Human Resources Department, where in his current role, he has actually personally interviewed and hired over 1,500 people to work for UPS here in Jacksonville. Clay loves our city and served 8 years on the Jacksonville City Council, his final year as president of this 19-member body. After serving at local level, he pursued a seat in state legislature, was elected, and currently serves in Florida House representing Jacksonville Southside and Fort Caroline areas. Clay and his wife, Jordan, have twin 6-year-old now. I remember when they were born, a 2-year-old son, and now they're expecting their fourth one in January. So thank you, Clay, for being here. Next we have Timothy Yost, and he is also running for Jacksonville District 12 in the House of Representatives. He is currently a teacher at a local high school and an adjunct professor at one of our local colleges as well. So a lot with education. Prior to teaching, Tim was an operations specialist in the United States Navy. He's dedicated to improving education in Florida and will be a tireless advocate for people of Jacksonville. Today, he's running for candidate of District 12 House of Representatives. So we'll begin our question session with Clay. Your first question: what is your top accomplishment as a state representative, and what is your top priority in the upcoming legislative session?
Thank you, Betsy. And Tomas, thank you for allowing us to be here tonight to do this. It was great in August. It's great to be back with you and everybody tonight. So thank you for doing this, and Betsy, for your involvement too. I think the accomplishment thus far that I'm most proud of is last year I filed a bill that related to protecting our families and children whenever there are certain occupations that go into a home when they're providing services, like you'll have everything from cable technicians to plumbers to electricians and also moving companies. There was a particular issue that caught my attention with regard to moving companies, and there was an incident that occurred where I won't go into too much detail for sake of time and our audience, but there was an incident that occurred with an employee of a moving company, and the state is not going to go in and tell a business you can or can't hire this individual, but we can make sure that we provide a notice if an individual that has a criminal record, but not just a criminal record, but in the case of a sexual predator, if they are coming into a home where there is a family and children, then they need to have notice beforehand before someone enters the home. So it was an idea that was very quickly received in both the House and the Senate. We got unanimous approval, and it went to the governor. He signed it very quickly, and that was the first bill that I filed and saw signed into law. So I'm thankful for that, so that we can protect our families and children. As far as moving forward, the second part of your question, the number one thing that I believe we have to focus on, not only this coming year, but in the future years, is more funding for school safety. We cannot make our schools safe enough, and this is something we should have been working harder toward before the tragedy that we saw earlier this year in South Florida, but we have to work to put in more money for school safety and for mental health programs as well.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. So your second question, A few years back, the state Senate, or the Senate Republicans, supported Medicaid expansion. If a new governor wants to expand Medicaid, would you support it? And if not, why?
Thank you for that question. That's a very important issue, as we all know. My understanding of what the Senate took up, just in doing some research on that, what they took up a few years ago was not an exact carbon copy of what we've seen from the federal level and necessarily what we've seen from some other states as well. And it was more of, for lack of a better term, a hybrid model that also worked in some work requirements and some deductibles, which is different than what we have today. So I would not support the current model and just, you know, support expansion. That's, to me, not a good idea. But if we're going to look at other options, especially with a work requirement for individuals and deductibles, we certainly want to improve access and quality. I would be open to that discussion.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now we move over to Tim Yost. So your first question, should Florida increase its minimum wage? And if so, how much should it be and why?
Yes, absolutely. Florida should increase its minimum wage. As far as how much, a lot of us say $15 an hour, and $15 an hour can work in many places. Maybe it'd work in Jacksonville, but maybe it wouldn't work in, say, smaller communities such as Palatka. And I think that as a state house leader, we should be looking out for all communities, for all small businesses as well. So what we have right now is the level is put at a random, or not a random, but a collection of goods, milk, and et cetera. And I think that we should tie the minimum wage to the average price of rent in a given community. So right about now, average price of rent in Jacksonville, Florida is about $900, and that's for a one-bedroom apartment. And that, you know, $7 or $8.25 an hour is just not gonna get you there. So we have forced people to work about 2-3 jobs. I can tell you now, as a teacher, I would love to talk to many of my parents. I would love to talk to them about their students' progress in school. And they can't make it because they are working 2 or 3 jobs. They can't help their child with their homework when they get to home. And that's primarily because the cost of living is way too high, and we're not giving our employees enough to live just to live on. And so, I think that if we were to fundamentally rework this so that the price of that minimum wage was tied to the average price of rent, something that we all need is a home.
Okay, thank you very much. Your second question, what can the state do to foster the growth of small businesses?
Thank you very much. That's another question. Now, I am not a small business owner. I have never had the courage to step out on my own. But the small business owners that I have spoken to, they haven't complained too much about overtaxation or overregulation or anything like that. Their main concern is having the employees to be able to hit the ground running right when they get to work. And I think that if small businesses knew that we had a school system that graduated kids at 18, 19 years old, that were able to multitask, that were able to hit the ground running, then I think that small businesses could save a lot of money on turnover and a lot of money on hiring, and knowing rest assured that the students that they were getting, that the young men and women that they're getting, were just going to be top-notch employees. And I think that if we invest more in our schools, invest more in not testing, but in a system where we collaborate with the teacher just the way you would collaborate with a employer, I think that we can help small businesses expand.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. All right, so we want to come back and do our final closing remarks. I'd like to ask each of you to take at least 1 minute to just give us any closing remarks, anything that you want to talk about. Let's keep an eye on our timer here.
Once again, thank you for the opportunity, Betsy and Tomas. This is a great forum and a great opportunity to talk directly to voters. Most importantly, I want the voters to know that I'm a Christian, I'm a father, I'm a son, I'm a husband. My wife Esther is in the audience. She's if you know the Bible, Esther's my queen. She joined the Marine Corps in 2001 after 9/11. She's my hero. My daughter's with me tonight, Lexi. This is why I do what I do. When people say, why do you run? I give them the ages of 15 and 4, the ages of my children, because we've been blessed to grow up and live in the greatest country on the face of the earth. And I want to continue and make sure that my children have that same opportunity. My son's at cross-country practice. That's why he's not with us tonight. But it's been an honor and a pleasure, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Mr. Yarborough.
I don't know how to top Cord Bird. That was so good what he was saying, so I don't know how to top it. Now, I regret that Jordan and our boys can't be here tonight, what Cord said I'll certainly echo, and I'm sure most of the candidates or all would say the same thing. I love Jacksonville. I was raised here and love our city and want to see it better than the way I found it. And public service is a passion, but it became all the more real and all the more important to me whenever our boys were born, our six-year-olds when they were first born, and then we've had, I think we're having a team here now. We have all boys, and our fourth is due in January, but all the more reason to work hard in this position and not just sit there and be another vote for this or just join in the conversation on that, but really go over there and seek to maximize the time and make the best difference for our community that we can and support our good values that make our city great, make our state great, and make America great. So thankful to have that opportunity. Betsy, again, thank you. Tomas, thank you so much for doing this. This is a big deal, and you put a lot of time and energy into this, and we really appreciate it. And if you live in District 12, I ask for your vote November 6th. Clay Yarborough for principled leadership. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, one more. Mr. Yost, closing remarks.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Betsy, for fielding this. Thank you, Tomas. It's been a great event, not just once, but twice. Thank you very much as well. I am Timothy Yost. I am running for the State House of Representatives in District 12. I'd also like to thank Clay. Clay has been very gracious to me, very wonderful to me, in welcoming to this race. I think that this is what democracy is about. This is about two people who may not disagree other than on ties, but who may disagree on some of the fundamental issues, but can have a good, honest conversation about where we go. I'm not a lifelong Jackson or Jackson. I'm actually from South Florida. I first came to Jacksonville right after the 9/11 attacks when I joined the Navy. And as soon as I went down JTB that first time, felt the little bump up there, and I hit 3rd Street. I fell in love with this town. I fell in love with the beach community that we have here. I fell in love with the Southside community that we have here. I just fell in love with this town. And I'm so thankful to be living here, and I'm so thankful to be able to join in on this great thing we call politics. I know a lot of us are very cynical about politics these days, but you and me and all of us here, this is what real politics is. It's not the haranguing that's going on up at the federal level. It's you and us in this room. I'm running for District 12. I humbly ask for your vote, and I humbly ask for your support on November 6th and October 22nd. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. So that concludes our first segment. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. I'd like to ask our next round to come up, those running for District 15 and 16, if you'll join me on stage. Well, thank you so much. Thank you, candidates. And thank you for being here. So we're going to do the same thing again. We'll start out with District 15, and then we'll move on to 16. So our first candidate for District 15 is Wynum Duggan. So Mr. Duggan is a member of Rogers Tower. He's part of the board of directors and a former chair of the firm's governmental and regulatory law department. He represents individuals, businesses, and nonprofits. His practice areas include land use, zoning, permitting, developments of regional impacts, concurrency approvals, governmental relations, general legislative matters, special acts of Florida legislation, J bills, charters, amendments, property taxations, pretty much anything you want, sounds like, right? So, Mr. Winan was born in Jacksonville. He's a fifth generation Floridian, a graduate of the United States Marine Corps Officer Candidate School, and was commissioned as a Marine officer. Next to him, we have Dr. Tracy Polson, also a candidate for House District 15. Ms. Polson is a licensed clinical social worker with more than two decades of experience working with children, parents, and families. Dr. Polson is a recognized expert in her field. She put herself through college, earning her doctorate degree, and has taught and guided young people at several universities, including the University of North Florida. She knows firsthand the enormous high stakes of healthcare for families. As a breast cancer survivor herself, she and her family have lived through the fears and uncertainty of what battling cancer means, including assessing and paying for those treatments. So Dr. Tracy Polson is running as a candidate for Florida House State of Representatives, District 15. We begin with questions for Mr. Winan. Your first question: what do you plan to do in Tallahassee to improve the lives of veterans in the First Coast?
Thank you, Betsy. So obviously we have an enormous military presence here in Jacksonville, and particularly in House District 15. And it's of course incumbent upon us to serve those who have served and sacrificed for us. So I would look for ways to enhance and expand those programs that are already in place to serve our veterans, like the Veterans Treatment Courts that have been so effective here in the Fourth Judicial Circuit, Veterans Florida, a clearinghouse for resources available to all veterans throughout the state, and just at a higher level, not just for veterans, but particularly impactful for veterans, is ways to expand mental health funding for all of our citizens, but particularly to help those members, first responders and veterans who suffer from, you know, the effects of their service. And I have a plan to grow and expand that mental health funding, and I look forward to implementing it.
Very good, thank you. Your second question: what challenges do you see in Florida's K-12 educational system? And if elected, what would you do to address those challenges?
Thank you. So one thing that I think is incumbent upon us is to bring back and expand opportunities for vocational and technical training in junior highs and high schools. I think we went way too far the other way to eliminate that. I can give you one anecdote. I had a young man who was going to work for me on the campaign this summer. He is 18, graduated high school. Then he got into a pipe fitter apprenticeship training program here in town with one of our local manufacturers. And after 9 weeks, he has a job, he has a skill set, he has a career path. He's making $20 an hour. And ultimately, he may be ready to go on to higher education, and he can do that out of his earnings. You know, he can save money so he doesn't have to take on a bunch of debt. So that is something I think it's incumbent upon us to provide as a resource for all of our students. There's not a one-size-fits-all, you know, path to success in life, and I would like to see us duplicate the dual enrollment we have with our state college system for a skilled trade certificate.
Very good, thank you so much. All right, next is Dr. Tracy Polson. Your first question: do you support Andrew Gillum's proposal of raising corporate tax? And if so, why?
So thank you, Betsy. Thank you, Tomas. Thank you, everyone, for being here this evening. It's a pleasure to have an opportunity to answer some of these questions. So first, I would have to see the actual legislation before I would decide whether or not that I would support it. But I think it's important for each of you to know this fact, and I wrote it down so that I would have it accurately. In Florida, 97% of businesses do not pay a corporate tax. I want to make sure everybody's paying attention. 97% of businesses. My understanding is that once Andrew Gillum is elected governor, he wants to raise the corporate tax from 5.5% to 7.75%. And why he wants to do that is he wants to invest $1 billion into public education. That I am in favor of. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. All right, your second question. In your opinion, what is the best way to promote economic stability for Floridians?
So as Betsy mentioned in my introduction, I am the first person in my family to graduate from college, much less get a graduate degree and a PhD. That education has allowed me to own my own business and to do things, quite frankly, that many members of my family have not been able to do. There is a direct relationship between really high-quality public education and the economy. We need early childhood education that is research-driven, that's high quality, that continues through high school, that will allow students to choose for themselves whether or not they go to college, but most of all prepares them for an innovative workforce. We need to be training our students very early ages to compete in the 21st and 22nd century. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So we're gonna move over to Florida District 16. And then we'll come back for closing remarks. All right, so our first candidate is Jason Fisher, who is a native of Jacksonville. After graduating from the University of North Florida with a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering, Mr. Fisher has worked for Florida Power and Light and as a civilian engineer in the United States Navy. He has spent 5 years supporting the global war on terrorism. And later, he transitioned into serving as an engineer for the Naval Facilities Engineering Command, where he was responsible for energy policies and utility infrastructure at several Navy bases in the Southeast. In 2011, Jason went to work for CSX, where he has been responsible for negotiations of energy and utility contracts in over 20 states. Currently, Jason works for Eurotech? Okay, where he is in charge of business development, and he's here in the Jacksonville area. Jason is a member of the Mandarin Rotary, a member of the FBI Task Force on Security. He's a former board of directors of the Society of American Military Engineers, say that slowly. And in 2012, Jason became the youngest person who was ever elected to the Duval County School Board. He and his wife, along with their young sons, live in the Mandarin area. Thank you, Jason, for being here. Our next candidate is Ken Organis. He is retired also from CSX. After 32 years of service, he moved to Jacksonville in 1976 and has lived in District 16 for over 40 years. Together with his wife, Peggy, they have raised 2 children and are now proud grandparents. He is a graduate of the University of North Florida, where he received a bachelor's degree in literature and communications and a master's degree in information systems and was an adjunct professor at Webster University in the 1990s. So thank you both for being here tonight. The first question goes to Jason. You have been critical of Duval County public school system. What advice would you give to them to improve their scores, their spending, and their accountability?
Well, first, I want to say thank you, Betsy and Tomas, for putting this forum on today. I think it's great for our republic. I think it's important to have public discussions about issues. So as an engineer, we're trained to think critically and identify issues, but also use data to drive solutions. And so anytime I've had a criticism, I've always offered up some things, and I'm glad to share those with you today. So I think the first thing that the Duval County School Board needs to do is have an external independent audit done of their finances. They had some recent financial trouble that they just kind of did an internal investigation on. It's kind of swept it under the rug. I think the next thing they need to do is do a zero-based budget, which is something that I led when I was on the school board in my first year. And we were able to invest more money in the classroom. And I think once they do their zero-based budget, they'll have a better understanding of where their money is. And they can find more ways to put money in the classroom.
get rid of some of their administrators, hire more teachers, focus on vocational programs like what was mentioned earlier, and then also get rid of the currently adopted Common Core aligned curriculum, toss that out, and find something better, because I know as a parent, I'm not happy with the way some of this, particularly on the math side, is working out. It's turning kids away from math, and that's not good for our society.
Okay, thank you so much. All right, listen closely on this one, because this is a little long. So recently, you retweeted a Florida representative, Jeb Brandy's tweet, which stated, "Florida's medical marijuana market is controlled by a small cartel of suppliers, while a surge in demand leads to high prices for sick Floridians. Next year, I will file legislation that puts patients first and will open the market to small businesses." So Jason, do you support such legislation, and what are your thoughts relating to this issue?
Thank you again. So I think I would need to see the particular legislation to say whether or not I would support it. What I would say first off is marijuana is still a Schedule I drug, which means it's still a federal crime for a lot of the things that people are already doing. So I think that needs to be addressed first. The other is it's a controlled substance. And so if it were to go into the public, we would need to make sure that the access was limited, that minors and drug addicts had a more difficult time getting access to it. But people who needed it, if there were medicinal purposes, could still get access to it. You know, the part of the reason why I retweeted that is because I voted against the recent implementing bill for that for a couple reasons. One, because it's still a federal crime, but two, because it did create a cartel. It created a few extremely wealthy people at the source of it. And so, as a market-driven person, I think we need to look at how do we not create a monopoly? How does government not create a monopoly? How do we make sure that there's innovation? How do we make sure that we're driving down costs? Because that's ultimately what will happen. You have a few people who get ridiculously wealthy, they'll control the system, and it ultimately won't be good for the public.
Thank you very much. All right. So, Mr. Ken, your first question. Okay. Following the school shooting in Parkland in February, Florida passed the Majority Stoneman-Douglas School Safety Act. This was followed by a great deal of social action, which now seems to kind of have quieted down. What is your proposal to make our schools safer?
First, I want to echo the other candidates in thanking Tomas Jimenez, the Jimenez Law Firm, all the other sponsors for this great public forum where probably no other place in Jacksonville where you can see all the candidates at one time and get their opinions. This is great. I'm very concerned that with the 24-hour news cycle and with the political turmoil going on, that what happened at Parkland back in February is going to go into the dustbin of history, like unfortunately some of the other mass shootings have done. It's our moral imperative as parents, as grandparents, that we cannot let this happen. I have a three-point plan to make schools safer, and the first is to implement reasonable gun legislation that respects our Second Amendment rights. And the second is to make our schools safer places to learn, but also remaining inviting places to learn. And the third point I would like to make is that we need to do more to keep guns out of the hands of dangerous people. And one of the other candidates mentioned mental health. Well, the fact that we're 49th in the country in mental health spending doesn't really hold water.
Okay, we're gonna address this one in your next question.
Okay.
So let me just cut you off for a minute. We want to make sure that we're keeping track of time.
Okay.
So your second question, what do you think should be done to address the growing issues of uninsured and underinsured people in our communities with regard to healthcare? So if you would please address that healthcare question.
Well, the first thing we can do is there is a low-hanging fruit. And that low-hanging fruit is the Medicaid money that has been there for years for the taking. That would ensure millions of additional Floridians right there. And one of the greatest uses of Medicaid funds is mental health spending, which would also help with our gun violence problem here in the state. I would also say that if we have a change in leadership at the top of the state as well as in the legislature, then we can bring an Affordable Care Act exchange here in Florida. And I know with speaking with some of the members of the Latino community, affordable health care is a top issue.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, so we'd like to move back to Dr. Polson, if you will do your closing remarks, and we'll just go in order.
Well, thank you again for being here, everyone. I am Dr. Tracy Polson. I'm the mom of 5 grown children. I am a mental health professional, a small business owner, a breast cancer survivor, and I'm the daughter of an Army veteran. Since I filed to run, my team and I have collectively knocked on over 15,000 doors, not just Democrat doors, but our doors and NPA doors. And we have had some very powerful conversations about what people in District 15, what keeps them up at night, the sorts of issues related to education, the fact that teachers have to work 2 jobs, spend their own money on supplies for their children and food for their children that they teach, the fact that people do not have health care and are suffering from serious illnesses, and many people have talked to us about wanting to know what can be done about violence in this community. I'm a professional listener, and I have been listening diligently to them, not only in rooms like this, but in one-on-one conversations. That level of interest and focus, along with the more than 30 endorsements that I received from local organizations, statewide organizations, officials, I think will put me in good stead when I get to Tallahassee to represent folks in District 15. I would love to have your vote. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Mr. Weiner.
Thank you. Thank you, Betsy. Once again, you've done a fantastic job with this. Tomas, thank you also for putting this on. I know it's a tremendous amount of work. You're a sole practitioner. This is fantastic. This is clearly going to become one of the must-see items for every political season from here forward. So well done to you and to all of your sponsors. I'm Wyman Duggan. I've lived in House District 15 since 1995. I've raised 3 kids here in the public schools. I want Jacksonville to be a place that they want to come back to and contribute to and make, part a great community. I'm running because I want to further and continue the legacy of the last 20 years that has led to an environment that's conducive to economic growth and development, small business activity, hiring, and quality education for all of our students. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Mr. Ken.
Hi, thank you again for this wonderful forum. One thing I want you to take away from this evening is the reason that I'm running is that I love Florida, but I'm also very concerned about Florida. And the reason I'm concerned is because your voices are not being heard in Tallahassee. The voices that are being heard in Tallahassee are the special interest groups. I feel that is because the current leadership has been too long in Tallahassee. Your voices are not being heard on the important issues that affect your lives, and that goes especially for the Latino community. You're not being heard on stable, well-paying jobs with benefits. You're not being heard on respect and equality in the workplace. You're not being heard on a path to skilled trade jobs that are good paying and licensed. You're not being heard on good public education, the backbone of our country for 150 years, and on affordable higher education. You're not being heard on affordable care, and you're not being heard on the difficulty in obtaining loans for small businesses. Now, this doesn't pertain just to the Latino community. If you feel a little like you're hurting, like you're a little strapped, well, that's because in light of the economic boom, real income in Florida has declined declined 7% in the last 7 years. So if you're feeling the pain, you're not alone. Okay, I want one more word to the Latino community. You have a lot of power. You pay $20 billion in the state of Florida in taxes every year. Even undocumented workers pay $1 billion in taxes in the state of Florida and receive no benefits. But you have a lot of power, and you have to exercise that power here starting October 22nd through November 6th. Because if you don't use it, you're gonna lose it. And that would be a shame, because you deserve to be heard. I'm listening. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Audience, if I may ask you to please refrain from support or opposition for any of our candidates during this presentation. We're trying to move things along, and we want to try to give you as much time possible with the candidates. Mr. Jason.
Thank you, Betsy, and thank you again, Tomas, for pulling this forum together. My name is Jason Fisher. I'm the state representative for District 16. I was born and raised here in Jacksonville, but I come from a family of immigrants, some from Germany and some from Venezuela. That's right. Great-grandmother was escaping socialism, and she came here to this country. They came here to this country to live the American dream. And they were able to see someone like myself go off to college, first in my family to do so. My wife, on the immigration piece real quickly, my wife is also an immigrant. She's from Singapore, and we still chose to call Jacksonville home because we love it. And that's part of why I ran for the legislature, is because our values are being challenged. Our American way of life is being challenged. You see this rise of socialism going on, and we need to combat it with conservative values. We need to combat it with free markets and free principles. And that means helping everybody from the top to the bottom find their pathway to success, whether that's through education, whether that's through cleaning up our environment, or whether that's safer streets. I'm the only candidate in this race that has the background and the credibility of standing up on these issues. And so if you want someone who will stand up for you and your family, please vote for Jason Fisher, District 16, State House of Representatives. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, candidates. Okay, well, we are in our final segment. We are now, would like to ask District 4, U.S. House of Representatives, and Florida Senate candidates to please join me on the stage. Okay, well, we've got one more segment. Like to remind everybody, we're gonna try to keep this quick and easy, 30 seconds answers and 1 minute for closing remarks. So we're gonna start first with U.S. House of Representatives, District 4. I'd like to tell you a little bit about Jess Selmont.
Jess.
George Jess Selmont is a Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida resident, a husband and a father of two, an attorney and an entrepreneur. Jess has served on numerous boards and committees, public and private. He has served as a White House intern for President Bill Clinton in 1998, and he served two terms as a special advisor to the Jacksonville University, Tim Kost, and an associate athletic director. Also, he's teaching undergraduate and graduate courses in sports, business, and in law. Jess was appointed by the Lieutenant Governor and the Governor of Connecticut to serve consecutive terms on the state's Commission for Educational Technology, and was appointed to the East Hampton Conservation Commission and the Middle Haddam Historic District Commission. Jess has a bachelor's degree from Bard College, a master's degree from Yale University, and received his JD from Northeastern University School of Law. So we're gonna go ahead and get started with your questions.
And your first question is, recently, House Bill H.R. 6136 bill, also known as the Goodlatte 2, was introduced and defeated in the U.S. House of Representatives with no Democrats voting for the measure. This bill would have granted legal permanent residence to 1.8 million undocumented children arrivals comprised of 700,000 DACA recipients and 1.1 million Dreamers. The bill provided a transition for this 1.8 million to obtain a green card and a path to citizenship upon the funding to secure the southern border. Would you vote to trade a border wall with Mexico for protective status for Dreamers? More specifically, what do you want or what are you willing to give up in exchange for protective status or a path to citizenship for Dreamers?
Thank you for that brief question. I fully believe, and this, by the way, this is very Oprah-like when you're up here on the couches. It actually is Oprah-like because if you reach under your seats, Betsy has taped the keys to a new car for all of you. So you're all leaving today with a new car. Look.
They got to share it with me first.
Yes. Legislators, make sure you report that as a gift. Look, this is incredibly serious stuff. Dreamers deserve citizenship. There really is no deal to make there. Immigration, the right to immigrate into the United States, is what this country is about. This country does not build walls. This is not East Berlin. We are not Russia. What would I trade? I would certainly trade increased border protection, increased budget for border security, strategic fencing in places where it is needed, portions of walls in places where the Immigration Service feels that it is necessary to protect our borders. I would certainly trade with President Trump a couple of indictments. We'll take money laundering and fraud and tax evasion off the Mueller indictments if he would give up on the silliness about a border wall.
Okay, thank you so much. Your second question is not quite as long. Okay. So, in the current political climate, with a clear distinction between party lines, what are the areas that you feel like you will be able to compromise with your Republican counterparts, and how do you plan to do so?
Well, I think you get compromised by offering creative and smart, intelligent solutions to complex problems. I think you also create compromise when you listen as much or more than you talk, and when you respect your opponents. And I would certainly do all of those things when elected to Congress. I'm sorry, what was part two of the question?
How do you plan to do so? No. How would you reach across and how would you do so?
I think that we can all agree that an EpiPen that saves a child's life from a bee sting or a peanut shouldn't cost $500. I think I would hope that Republicans and Democrats in Congress could agree that cost containment on drugs and on procedures is necessary, whatever healthcare rubric we have. I also, in the course of this campaign, the Times Union has asked John Rutherford and I to come in and meet with the editorial board. John hasn't responded for 2 months. Melissa Ross, whose show I was on this morning, has tried to get John Rutherford and I to come on the show together for 2 months. He has not responded. Flagler College offered a debate last night. John Rutherford has not responded. At the Temple Brotherhood breakfast, somebody asked John if he would debate me, and John's answer was, why would I give him a platform for his ideas? I think as long as you return people like John Rutherford to Congress, I really fear about the ability to compromise.
Okay, well, thank you very much. All right, we are moving over and we'll come back for your closing remarks.
Great.
All right, thank you, Mr. Solmont. So we are focusing in on District 4, Florida Senate. Thank you both for being here.
So I'm going to read a little bit about Aaron Bean first. He was first elected to the Florida Senate in 2012. He was subsequently re-elected without opposition in 2014 and 16, and is currently serving as the chair of the Communications and Utilities Commission and is the chairman of the Duval County Legislation Delegation. Before being elected to the Florida Senate, Aaron served 8 years in the Florida House of Representatives and 2 terms as mayor of Fernandina Beach, something I learned last time as well. Ms. Billy Bizzard has been a Jacksonville resident since 1959. She has been a journalist for 25 years, including working with the Times Union, the Jacksonville Business Journal, the Jacksonville Journal, and as a freelance writer that writes cover stories on political issues and figures. She has also appeared in the Folio Weekly, the USA Today, the Baltimore Sun, and Billy has also been a small business owner and worked as a manufacturer's representative as a former administrator for a nonprofit as well. She's got quite the history there. Billy currently serves on a lot of different advisory boards, including Fletcher Middle School and JCCI. She did an education study with them. She was one of 4 organizers for the Women's March. She's also the president of the Beaches Democratic Club and also a member of the Duval County Democratic Executive Committee. And my goodness, she's actually worked with 2 congressional candidates. She attended Jacksonville University and the University of North Florida Political Science Studies. So 2 very great candidates that we have, but we're gonna begin with Aaron Bean. Your first question is, what is one of the most important factors in having a world-class education system?
Betsy, thank you very much, and good evening, Jacksonville, to the Jimenez Law Firm. Thank you for putting this together. I want to thank Tomas Sr. He hasn't been thanked yet. Let the record reflect that Senator Bean gave a shout-out to Tomas Sr. It's amazing. This event was started from scratch just a few months ago, so it has been one of the highlights of the primary races and now on the general races as well. We're talking about world-class education, and I think one of the most important things you can realize is that every kid is different. Every kid is different. And so one thing I've worked with when I was been in the legislature is work on options. Work on options for kids, whether it's private school, homeschool, a very strong public school system. Options that recognize not every kid will go to college, and that we need to provide also vocational opportunities, though, that if you aren't going to college, then you'll learn a skill that can feed yourself going forward.
Thank you so much. All right, next question, and it goes back to education a little bit. Following the Parkland shooting, you voted to enact the Majority Stoneman-Douglas Safety Act. Can you please explain why you voted for this act, and if you had to support, and if you had the support of the NRA?
Thanks again. That issue came right after the Parkland shooting, and it was highly controversial, but I was committed to passing some legislation that would prevent that type of tragedy from having again. I am an NRA member, but went, you know, I wasn't going against the NRA. I wanted to pass something that I thought was going to prevent that. The NRA got upset about raising the age of purchase for a long-barreled gun to 21. But again, having met the parents of people who buried their kids the week before, we were committed to pass something that was a bipartisan package that Republicans and Democrats came together so that we could say that that's not going to happen again. It also had so many other funding mechanisms for mental health, for hardening of schools, and I'm happy to say that it also had monies to give opportunities for school districts to provide more armed guards in schools, because protecting our kids, I don't think there's any greater responsibility than keeping our kids safe.
Thank you so much. Ms. Billy Bizzard, we have 2 questions for you as well.
So the first question is, recently you indicated that you would propose a 100 per bullet tax on every bullet sold in the state of Florida. Could you please expand on this proposal?
Well, actually, I was at a forum for candidates at Heckscher Drive Community Club, and guns were one of the issues people asked me about. And when I said $100 a bullet, I did not realize that that was a low suggestion. Daniel Patrick Moynihan said $5,000 a long time ago. And other politicians and public figures have recommended that we go after the bullets and tax them heavily, because if the bullets cost a lot, it'll be less likely for people to get access them and to shoot people. And you have to be a millionaire at $5,000 a bullet. So I think we need, the NRA says guns don't kill people. Guns don't kill people. People kill people. Well, bullets are what kill people, and that's what we have to go after. And use that money for that tax for school safety programs.
Thank you. Your second question, would you be in favor of expanding governmental programs by increasing taxes or keep taxes the same and lessen government programs? Which programs specifically would you cut?
Well, let me tell you something that I wouldn't do. There are a bunch of programs that I wouldn't cut. In the 20 years since the Republicans have been in control of our government, our quality of life has really gone down the tubes. If you go on my website, on my homepage, I have this list of rankings of Florida's quality of life. And so much of the quality of life is depending upon how healthy our population is. And so what I would not do is cut so many of the programs that the incumbent for the state house has in health care. We're 48th in overall health care rankings, 49th in health care coverage for children. He supported laws to reduce quality of care for nursing home patients, for assisted living patients, for an Alzheimer's center. He wanted to close a TB hospital.
Are these the ones that you would cut, though?
Those are not things that I would. I would
which
not
ones would you cut? We're 30 seconds. So
which
programs would you cut?
I would cut a lot of the money that has been given for tax cuts for corporations and the richest people. We have got to have a level playing field in this state economically, or we're going to be the biggest banana republic on the planet and a cesspool environmentally.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your answer. All right, so our final round, we'd like to come back and do closing remarks. Keep in mind that we do have a timer. I'd like to keep us down to 1 minute each so that we can get to spend some time with our audience. So would you please begin?
Sure, I'd just like to say that in 2018, the Democratic Party is not going to win any elections by being an opposition party. In 2018, Democrats are going to win because we are the party of ideas. And those ideas are pretty much what they've always been. But we've just allowed others to identify us, to define us. Those ideas are protecting women's access to health care and their rights to make reproductive decisions about their bodies. It's about protecting LGBTQ rights. It's about protecting Social Security and veterans' rights. It's about ensuring fairness in our system, fairness in justice, and fairness economically. You know, I went to public schools my whole life. I never had a teacher who was my history teacher, my waitress at Chili's, and then worked on the floor at the garden center on Sunday. Being a teacher was a profession, and it was something that you could do. We need to add a fairness back into our system. As union membership has declined, so have real wages in a matching curve. We need to look at how we can expand unions to the gig economy, people who are working out of Starbucks on their laptop, don't they deserve the right to collectively bargain for healthcare benefits and for retirement benefits? And our judicial system, is there anyone here who thinks that the person with the most money in court isn't gonna win? So the Democratic Party in 2018 is about restoring fairness to our system. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Salmont. Ms. Bassard, what do you go next?
First of all, I would like to compliment all of the candidates who are running for office. I am 73 years old, and this is the first time I've been a candidate. I've helped candidates before, but being a candidate is a lot of hard work. I jumped into this race at the very last minute in June. I haven't raised a lot of money, but I have a lot of support, grassroots support, and you're not going to find them from corporations. My journalism career prepared me well to be a good legislator. I have studied the money in politics, and what I know is we need to clean Tallahassee of the influence of special money. It is what's driving this state into ruin, and we can't go on like this. So when I get to Tallahassee, I'm going to blow the whistles, as I have done on my investigative pieces on the money in politics, and I hope to make the state better. And I will be a one-term senator because at 77, I don't think I'm going to have the spunk. And by the way, I am the candidate who had a lot of spunk at 19 and interviewed the Beatles, had an exclusive interview with them, and I still have that spunk. And yes, ladies, I saw George and I saw Ringo walking around in their underwear, and it was boxers.
Thank you, Billy. Mr. Bean.
Betsy, thank you very much, and good evening again, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. You know, there's no greater honor than serving the people in an elected office. You gave me that privilege 6 years ago when I asked for your vote for the Florida Senate, and what a ride it's been together. And I say together because it takes a team to accomplish a lot of things that we've accomplished, whether it's millions of dollars for Jacksonville's infrastructure, roads, and drainage for our environment, whether it's tackling opioid crisis as we've worked on the last couple of years, whether it's legislation. My legislation helped bring about having cannabis oil for epileptic young children. There's been a variety of different things. I asked for your vote to continue that. You know, in the legislature, everything is on seniority. So if you elect me, if you give me another chance to go back, then it'll be my chance to be top of the ladder. That comes with great expectations, as you should have great expectations on me. But again, I will pledge to you that I will continue to be accessible. I will continue to be involved in the community, to speak at your club, and to be visible, to listen, so we can go forward together to create a great community that's a great place to live, work, and play. Aaron Bean, I ask for your support for the Florida Senate, October 22nd through November 6th. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you. You'll just stay on stage with me. I want to take this moment now to just thank all of our candidates and also our audience for participating with us tonight. We're so glad that you could have joined us. Our desire, of course, is always to have you learn a little bit more and enjoy the conversations and hopefully prepare you to vote. If your questions were not answered tonight, please reach out to these candidates. They'll be here after the program so that you can ask your questions one-on-one. I would like for you to join me in a reception. We've got some heavy hors d'oeuvres, compliments of our Senator Aaron Bean, once again helping us out with that. Once again, I want to thank our host, the Jimenez Law Firm, Tomas Jimenez Jr., the Northeast Florida Hispanic Leadership Alliance, and the First Coast Hispanic Chamber of Commerce for putting this program together. They, along with our candidates, will have tables in the back if you want to go get a little bit more material about who they are and what they do. Please don't forget to register to vote. Our supervisor of elections table is in the back. You can update your address and your signature block with them. Please take advantage of the fact that they're here. And again, remember to visit votejacksonville.com or votajacksonville.com for more details on upcoming events, and also to go to our Facebook page, Jacksonville Forum, so that you can upload all of your photos of this event and all your media uploads. At this time, I would like to ask all of our candidates to return to the stage. I would like to ask Tomas Jimenez Jr., Tomas Jimenez Sr., Andrea Reyes, Jose Paredes, all to join me back on the stage for a group photo. And I want to thank everybody else for being here tonight. Enjoy your evening.